Chapter 75. Long journey of the afternoon and evening, her timidity and revulsion of feeling, its culmination on reaching London, the crossing over to the down platform and their immediate departure again, solely in obedience to her wish, the journey all night, their anxious watching for the dawn, their arrival at St. Launce's at last were detailed. And he told how a village woman named Jethway was the only person who recognized them, either going or coming, and how dreadfully this terrified Elfride. He told how he waited in the fields, whilst this then reproachful sweetheart went for her pony, and how the last kiss he ever gave her was given a mile out of the town, on the way to Indelstow. These things Stephen related with a will. He believed that in doing so he established word by word the reasonableness of his claim to Elfride. Curse her. Curse that woman. That miserable letter that parted us. Oh God! Apostrophe, Knight began pacing the room again, and uttered this at further end. What did you say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Stephen, turning round. Say? Did I say anything? Oh, I was merely thinking about your story, and the oddness of my having a fancy for the same woman afterwards. And that now I have forgotten her almost, and neither of us care about her, except just as a friend, you know, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Knight still continued at the further end of the room, somewhat in shadow. Exactly, apostrophe, said Stephen, inwardly exultant, for he was really deceived by Knight's offhand manner. Yet he was deceived less by the completeness of Knight's disguise than by the persuasive power which lay in the fact that Knight had never before deceived him in anything. So this supposition that his companion had ceased to love Elfride was an enormous lightening of the weight which had turned the scale against him. Admitting that Elfride could love another man after you, apostrophe, said the elder, under the same varnish of careless criticism, she was none the worse for that experience. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the worse? Of course she was none the worse. Apostrophe, did you ever think it a wild and thoughtless thing for her to do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, indeed, I never did, apostrophe, said Stephen. I persuaded her. She saw no harm in it until she decided to return, nor did I, nor was there, except to the extent of indiscretion. Apostrophe, apostrophe, directly she thought it was wrong she would go no further? Apostrophe, apostrophe, that was it. I had just begun to think it wrong to. Apostrophe, such a childish escapade might have been misrepresented by any evil-disposed person, might it not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it might. But I never heard that it was. Nobody who really knew all the circumstances would have done otherwise than smile. If all the world had known it, Elfride would still have remained the only one who thought her action a sin. Poor child, she always persisted in thinking so, and was frightened more than enough. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Stephen, do you love her now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, I like her. I always shall, you know, apostrophe, he said evasively, and with all the strategy love suggested. But I have not seen her for so long that I can hardly be expected to love her. Do you love her still? Apostrophe, apostrophe, how shall I answer without being ashamed? What fickle beings we men are, Stephen. Men may love strongest for a while, but women love longest. I used to love her in my way, you know. Apostrophe, yes, I understand. Ah, and I used to love her in my way. In fact, I loved her a good deal at one time, but travel has a tendency to obliterate early fancies. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is it has, truly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, perhaps the most extraordinary feature in this conversation was the circumstance that, though each interlocutor had at first his suspicions of the other's abiding passion awakened by several little acts, neither would allow himself to see that his friend might now be speaking deceitfully as well as he. Stephen. Apostrophe, apostrophe, resumed Knight, now that matters are smooth between us, I think I must leave you. You won't mind my hurrying off to my quarters? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you'll stay to some sort of supper surely? Didn't you come to dinner? apostrophe, you must really excuse me this once. Then you will drop in to breakfast tomorrow. I shall be rather pressed for time. An early breakfast, which shall interfere with nothing. I'll come, said Knight, with as much readiness as it was possible to graft upon a huge stock of reluctance. Yes, early, 8 o'clock say, as we are under the same roof. Any time you like. 8 it shall be. And Knight left him. To wear a mask, to dissemble his feelings as he had in their late miserable conversation, was such torture that he could support it no longer. It was the first time in Knight's life that he had ever been so entirely the player of a part. And the man he had thus deceived was Stephen, who had docilely looked up to him from youth as a superior of unblemished integrity. He went to bed, and allowed the fever of his excitement to rage uncontrolled. Stephen, it was only he who was the rival, only Stephen. There was an anticlimax of absurdity which Knight, wretched and conscience-stricken as he was, could not help recognizing. Stephen was but a boy to him. Where the great grief lay, was in perceiving that the very innocence of Elfride in reading her little fault as one so grave was what had fatally misled him. Had Elfride, with any degree of coolness, asserted that as he had done no harm, the poisonous breath of the dead Mrs. Jethway would have been inoperative. Why did he not make his little docile girl tell more? If on that subject he had only exercised the imperativeness customary with him on others, all might have been revealed. It smote his heart like a switch, when he remembered how gently as he had borne his scorching speeches, never answering him with a single reproach, only assuring him of her unbounded love. Knight blessed Elfright for her sweetness, and forgot her fault. He pictured with a vivid fancy those fair summer scenes with her. He again saw her, as at their first meeting, timid at speaking, yet in her eagerness, to be explanatory borne forward almost against her will. How she would wait for him in green places, without showing any of the ordinary womanly affectations of indifference. How proud she was to be seen walking with him, bearing legibly in her eyes the thought that he was the greatest genius in the world. He formed a resolution, and after that could make pretense of slumber no longer. Rising and dressing himself, he sat down and waited for day. That night Stephen was restless too. Not because of the unwontedness of a return to English scenery, not because he was about to meet his parents and settle down for a while to English cottage life. He was indulging in dreams, and for the nonce the warehouses of Bombay and the plains and forts of Pune were but a shadow's shadow. His dream was based on this one atom of fact. Elfride and Knight had become separated, and their engagement was as if it had never been. Their rupture must have occurred soon after Stephen's discovery of the fact of their union, and, Stephen went on to think, what so probable as that a return of her errant affection to himself was the cause. Stephen's opinions in this matter were those of a lover, and not the balanced judgment of an unbiased spectator. His naturally sanguine spirit built hope upon hope, till scarcely a doubt remained in his mind that her lingering tenderness for him had in some way been perceived by Knight, and had provoked their parting. To go and see Elfride was the suggestion of impulses it was impossible to withstand. At any rate, to run down from St. Launce's to Castle Pierrel, a distance of less than 20 miles, and glide like a ghost about their old haunts, making stealthy inquiries about her, would be a fascinating way of passing the first spare hours, after reaching home on the day after the morrow. He was now a richer man than heretofore, standing on his own bottom, and the definite position in which he had rooted himself nullified old local distinctions. He had become illustrious, even sanguine clerus, judging from the tone of the worthy mayor of St. Launce's. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.